This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome to the Chelsea Fancast Friday night preview show. I can say with full confidence and a big smile on my face that in fact it is actually Friday. And it's not often I can say that on what is supposed to be a Friday night preview show. But there you go. I'm of course Stamford Chidge. I'm now about 80% match fit, so I'm getting there. And as always, I am aided and abetted in my crimes and misdemeanours by the Right Honourable Jonathan Kidd.
Well, not as always, because I missed Tuesday, didn't I, Chidge?
You did, actually. We missed you too.
I was at the cottage watching Fulham be promoted.
Yes, I did actually say on air that you were cottaging.
Yeah, I thought you would have done. It would have been ridiculous if you hadn't, in fact. That's absolutely what I would have expected. But I don't think, unless they make about six purchases, that they're going to be much of a threat next year, let's put it that way.
Okay.
It was fun, and there were people that were saying on the pitch, and it was suggested I get on the pitch, and I thought, no, I don't actually support Fulham, so I won't be getting on the pitch to go and throw Mitro up in the air like lots of the others did. But, Dan, oh, it's all right, I haven't introduced you yet. You can't put your finger up yet. I haven't introduced you. I've got to introduce you. But I'll introduce you now. Somebody on the show tonight, who, although he's called silver, is in fact gold.
Mm. Oh, bless.
Ooh.
Bless.
It's that excellent, excellent wordsmith and terrific Twitter quipper. It is the terrific Dan Silver.
Very, very kind words. I was actually going to say, did you have a shirt saying, please, Mitrovic, can I have your shirt, please? That's what I was asking. No, it's good to be back. It's been a very long time. It's good to be back.
Yeah, how was your trip to the States?
Yeah, trip was incredible. Big shout out to Walker, who took me out and my friends out for a really good night. Some amazing barbecues and some drinks. So it was, you know, fabulous trip.
Good stuff, good stuff. I knew they'd look after you. And who else have we got? JK?
Well, I mean, I don't know why I'm bothering to introduce him. He's on nearly every Friday. It's that great. He's shaking his head. He's shaking his head. No, he's not really. He is on a lot, though. He's been writing his usual drivel, no, his complete excellence on football.london. And he is the absolutely fantastic Adam Newson.
Thank you, JK.
Adam, it's really good to see you, man. I feel I owe you quite a lot of articles, having been in bed for 2 weeks. But there you go. How have you been? Have you been all right?
Yeah, I've been good. I've been good. Didn't enjoy Wednesday night. Oh, I'm sure, you know, we're going to get into that. But yeah, I'm all right. Been a lot of travelling over the last 2 weeks as well.
Yeah. Well, at least you made it out to the Bernabeu, right?
Yes, I did. For one of the best Chelsea performances I've seen, probably in Europe.
Yeah, we won't
go into that too much because it's too disappointing.
Well, we could talk about that instead of talking about the Arsenal match. I think that would probably be lovely, wouldn't it? I think that may have coincided. I'm trying to remember if I was I wasn't on the show when we talked about the Real Madrid match, so I missed that. So, JK, you put your hand up. Do you need to go to the toilet or something?
I said we can talk about Madrid in comparison to the performance away in Madrid to the recent home performance.
We might do that.
There is a correlation, isn't there?
We might do that. But look, we are going to kick off with talking about Chelsea's abysmal showing against Arsenal on Wednesday. And as we've got Adam with us, we'll pick up on the latest Chelsea news. I just warn Adam now that I didn't see the press conference today because I was in my allotment planting potatoes. That's my excuse. I'm sticking to it. So I'm relying entirely on you. In part two, we have I won't tell you who it is, but we will have an opposition view. It'll obviously be West Ham related. Part three, we are going to look at the West Ham match ourselves, of course, which is on Sunday. And we've got a part four this week, which I might cut out and make as a special. We'll see. But we've got Paul Cannavale joining us later to talk about the Chelsea bids and what he's been up to and all sorts of other things too. So there we go. So pack show tonight. So I shall get on with it. The first question I'm going to ask is to Adam. And I know you did the presser afterwards on Wednesday, so I know I pretty much know what you're going to say, I suspect. But and I know that Tuchel himself actually did point the finger at himself. But the first question really, Adam, is how responsible was Tuchel for that defeat on Wednesday to Arsenal?
I mean, yes, to an extent. I'm surprised at the team he picked. I was surprised that having settled upon Malang Sarr and Reece James as the sort of the wide centre-backs of the three, that he didn't go Thiago Silva, just because that seems the most logical thing to do. Other than that, I mean, to be honest, that's pretty much the team I predicted, barring Malang Sarr coming in because of Rudiger's injury. So, yeah, I think Tuchel is responsible to an extent, but ultimately he can't be at fault for the mistake of Andreas Christensen. He can be at fault for maybe picking him, but, you know, that's such a routine mistake that, you know, that's nothing to do with the head coach. And I don't want to get into the whole, does this squad have the right mentality? Because I think it's a bit churlish given they won the Champions League this season. But I do think there is an element of complacency that kicks in certain games. And I'm not sure why, when you see that Chelsea team against Arsenal, and I don't want to speak for everybody, so do correct me. But I saw that team and thought, yeah, I'm concerned here. I'm not sure that's going to do it. And then you just watch this 90 minutes of chaos and nonsense unfold, and you're just wondering, surely Tuchel could have seen some of this happening. And he is a brilliant head coach and an absolute genius. So there must be mitigating circumstances as to perhaps why he didn't. But yeah, his post-match press conference, he was pretty surly at points. He was asked about the ASP incident at the end, and he sort of said, I sympathise with the fan, which probably said everything you need to know about his mood, because he was extremely pissed off about the penalty, more than anything, seemingly. He mentioned that specifically. So yeah, I think there is an element of Tuchel being at blame for the selection, but ultimately he's not to blame for some of the mistakes we saw from Andreas Christensen, from Malang Sarr, and certain other players on that pitch. You know, there's only so much he can do in that respect.
Yeah, I the sympathy I have with Tuchel at the moment is that he's kind of it's almost like hope rather than expectation. I think that, well, I'm going to talk about this later, but I might as well pitch in now. But I think we've got a massive issue with exhausted and fatigued players, and he'll know that better than any of us. So I think what he does is he goes, I can't keep playing these players because they're absolutely knackered. So I'm gonna have to go against my better instincts and play some of these other players. And of course, every time he does, they play shit and they let him down. So I have some sympathy with him. But I mean, talking of that, and I will let you in a minute, Dan. Let me just ask JK this, because I want to pick up on something that he said a few weeks ago on the show, because I wasn't on it when he was on it and he was saying Christensen played really well. I didn't think he did at all, to be honest. It was against Palace, JK, in the FA Cup semi-final. But I have to say, mate, my patience is snapped as far as Christensen's concerned. It's no, it was no coincidence to me that he took Christensen off in the semi-final against Palace and replaced him with Silva, because he almost let Palace in for a goal. He's making a lot of mistakes. I don't think his head's in the game. He's off. What is the point? Apart from the fact, as I've just said, we have a lack of bodies. But I would not be unhappy if I never saw Christensen, Lukaku and Malang Sarr on a Chelsea shirt again, JK?
I would agree completely. I think that the time has come for him never to select Lukaku again. And so I think the difficulty we have as supporters is we know you don't ever want to lose to Arsenal at the Bridge because there's so much crowing goes on the following day and it's almost like a cup final for them. And of course, it happened last year and I think it happened the year before as well, didn't it? And we seem just to not come in with the right attitude towards the fact that this is a London derby and of great... what's the word? It means an enormous amount to every Chelsea fan, as every game means enormous and an enormous amount. But you hope that you will be prepared for this fixture. And the second that we saw the team, it was universal all over Twitter and, you know, even in my head, that there was going to be a slight problem. However, on previous experience, we haven't actually been playing that badly with the people he's slotted in because they seem to be part of the project. But what appears to have happened over the last few weeks is that those players, well, they've just become, even the better players have become shabby. I mean, poor old Kante just kept giving the ball away nonstop. I likened him in my fan bike to Frank Sinclair, who, you know, loses the ball, gets it back, we all cheer, loses the ball again, gets it back, we all cheer, and then gives the ball away to somebody who then goes up the other end and has a shot. That appeared to be quite the norm. But your question was about Christensen. I would disagree with you. Somebody actually said to me, a mate of mine was listening to the Fancast, he said that you would disagree with me and my attitude towards Christensen in the semi-final.
I love the fact that we can argue over two shows that we're not on. That's just beautiful. I love that.
Yes. Because... well, it just goes to show that people do listen to the fan cast, which is lovely. But I thought that the particular attacking ability that they had, Palace, was similar to Brentford, which is, you know, they're sitting back and they break. And I thought we'd learnt the lesson. And I thought Christensen did very well because he snuffed out nearly every attack, along with who was the other centre-back with him? Dave, I thought, played very well in that game. Every single time the ball was booted down the pitch, which appears to be that, which we failed to deal with against Brentford when we lost 4-1. We dealt with it at Palace very well. But I thought he actually played very well indeed. I didn't have this vision of him that he hadn't played well against Palace. So I wonder whether, in fact, he's suffering from being exhausted. And as Tuchel went on, how many have we played? We're going to have played 64 out of possible 66 games, which I think is that practically more than anybody else? Yeah, is that the
definitely
the situation? I can't remember. So I've meandered around your original question that was I think about Christensen, but we were discussing, weren't we, about whether we looked at the team. I mean, it was appalling that Sarr came in and played so badly. It was appalling that Dave played so badly. It was appalling that Lukaku really is an absolute, it's a waste of time. They don't know how to play with him. He doesn't know how to play with them and he's not making any effort. So, you know, I'd have taken him off very early on and put Pulisic in. So we at least then had three people running around or brought Havertz on earlier. But you wonder, I don't know. I you can always tell from my point of view where I'm sitting in the East Stand when Tuchel is actually really interested in the game. Because if he's up for it, he gets up and it's absolutely in everybody's face. And when he gives in to the whole thing, he sits on the bench and does nothing. And I pass over to you, Adam, because your finger was up.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point, JK. And it's something I sort of noticed as well during the game that Tuchel was sort of standing on the touchline, but there weren't the sort of histrionics you expect from him. There weren't the sort of outbursts of players. And it was kind of strange. It was almost like a body swap because Arteta was doing that. And that's not the sort of usual level of antics from Arteta. So, yeah, I completely get JK's point there. And I do agree that Tuchel seemed subdued himself on Wednesday night. And for whatever reason, maybe that did translate through to the players before the game because, it was very strange watching him because he was standing on the touchline a lot of the game, but he didn't seem, you know, he talks about emotional investment a lot and he didn't seem to have the same level as he normally does either.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Dan, you'd be busting to come in.
Yeah, going back to exhaustion, also, you know, like Reece James playing right centre back, we lose so much from him on the right hand side.
You know why he's doing that? Because he's worried about him getting injured.
His injury. Yeah. So there's so many sort of almost square pegs in Ryan Holster point. You know, Alonso had an Alonso sort of game. It was just, I mean, I think that there's Arsenal's second goal. I think Lukaku made a half-assed attempt to get the ball. And then 30 seconds later, we're 2-1 down. I mean, it's, you just think, you know, your big, strong striker, he was just insipid and lazy and just didn't seem interested at all. I mean, literally, he could have won that ball. 30 seconds later, boom, we're 2-1 down. Just thought, it just shows that, you know, our squad is not as deep as people think. There's some players who are just simply not good enough to play for Chelsea.
Yeah, well, at all. I think on that point,
I also think...
Can I just make this quick point, JK, and then let you come in, yeah? Because it kind of follows on really from what you both said, because I kind of scribbled down a few notes after the game on Wednesday, and I think we've got a problem with players that are out of form, players that are absolutely knackered, and players that are injured. Out of form, Christensen, Chiloba, Jorginho, Pulisic, Ziyech, Lukaku. Players that are absolutely on their last legs and knackered. Silva, Aspi, Kante, Havertz, you could say Mount, but he just never looks it, so I maybe would leave him out of that. And then you've got, obviously, Kovacic and Rudiger are both injured. They were huge misses. Yeah. Chilwell, we've known about for a while, as of course, Hudson-Odoi as well. And then players that are not good enough, I would put Sarr, Saul and Barkley. But it does... You can't. I don't think Chelsea, whether we've got a deep enough squad or not, can afford to have that many players either knackered or out of form, and that's what we've got, Dan.
Yeah, exactly. If you took four key players out of any, like Liverpool City, they'd all really struggle. You know, our season pretty much changed when Chilwell got injured against Juventus. We didn't replace him. Kennedy, why he brought him back, I don't think he's had any minutes at all, has he? You know, that's when our season changed, because that Juventus game, 4-0,
against Luton.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, but generally speaking, that 4-0 against Juventus, we were like top of our game. Chilwell got injured, we haven't really recovered, you know, and then James out for long periods of time. You know, just some players that aren't good enough. I mean, Sarr couldn't get much of a game at Porto. You know, since he gave away that penalty against Plymouth, his game's gone to shit. Because he was had a couple of good games in his defence. Christensen, I think his mind is on a new club. I don't think he's had a couple of good games for us, but, you know, he needs to be in the three and he needs not to be in the centre. And it's Arsenal. I mean, this is the worst Arsenal side I've seen for 25 years.
Makes it so annoying. Anyway, JK, yeah. Sorry, Max, I did stop you a minute ago. But
there were several things. I've just felt that your point about Lukaku giving the ball away and going for a half-hearted challenge and then the ball being up the other end is absolutely typical of the kind of thing that they know that they strive to avoid, which is giving the ball away in areas where it gives the opposition an opportunity to get up the other end as quickly as possible. So not only is he useless at actually putting the ball anywhere near the net or providing anything for anybody else, that kind of thing sets up the opportunity for an attack up the other end. And I was intrigued by watching Fulham during the week where one of their wingers tried to keep the ball in. That was his big thing. It was going out. He kept it in, went into the hoarding. Everybody went, yeah. And nobody had considered the fact that now the opposition, Preston, had the ball and they just went up the other end and they hit the bar. And it's that kind of approach that Fulham will fall foul of unless somebody works out, oh, actually, I've got to come and stop somebody now because they've got the ball on the left-hand side. Two passes in. So it's that kind of absolutely fine margin. The other thing, just to contradict this, is talking about how rubbish we are, is that the away form is completely brilliant. We've scored 11 goals away in three games, and we've conceded 11 goals. So you wonder whether, you know, Tuchel came up with this bizarre thing that it was the ball not bouncing properly, which I thought was a very low moment for him, and he should never have said that because he came across as being a complete idiot. But Dan is going to disagree with me. However, I want to make my last point here. Christensen, very quickly, because of his terrible displays, apparently, they're now, according to the press, doubting whether he will actually go to Barcelona because they've been looking at him. Somebody, there's been a report in various Spanish papers saying that because he's played so badly, they are now doubting whether he is the man for them. But anyway.
Okay, Dan and then Adam.
I don't know which one.
Yeah, my point was just about stupid excuses. Fergie, Klopp, they always put stupid excuses. I mean, Klopp used the weather one day when Liverpool lost. It just is a deflection tactic. I don't think he's that serious. It just good managers make excuses which take, you know, deflection away from the poor performance. Mourinho's done it, Fergie's done it, Wenger did it, Klopp does it. I don't take too much, you know, store in what he says. Just a diversion tactic, in my opinion.
Fair enough. Adam?
It's like a dead cat, is it?
I was going to just say, and I thought maybe moving on to today's presser a bit prematurely, but Tuchel did talk about the pitch again today as a sort of an issue. So I think there's probably more to it than maybe it felt like after that game, because he was talking about it being a problem and how sort of the pitch wasn't renewed at the right time. It's probably not where it should be at the beginning of the season, and that they felt a difference at home matches and away matches. So. Well, maybe not as big a deflection tactic as we thought, and a genuine issue. That being said,
yeah, go
he's
on.
Not mentioned it before, so.
Well, there is that, but there is something a bit remiss or amiss with the home form. There's no doubt about that, and I mean, you know, the last three home matches have been absolutely shocking. You know, 11 goals conceded in three games is not good enough at all. But. I think I do. Hang on a minute.
1993. Same point. Only a point. First three losses in a row since 1993.
Yeah. Exactly. That's. I mean, I think that says it all, because we were truly crap in 93. But I wonder if it has a lot to do with what actually happened in this match, if you think about it, because, you know, when Arsenal scored that third goal, it became a 1-0 game. So you know what I was talking about last Friday? I was saying, you know, what they'll do is they'll try and nick a goal, and then they'll defend with 10 men behind the ball and try and catch us on the break. And that's actually how they played at 3-2. I mean, because the entire first half was nuts, as we know. And I think that's what people do. We cannot break teams down who defend with 10 men behind the ball. We haven't been able to do that for bloody years, really, since Hazard used to be able to find a way through. And that's what teams do against us. And then, of course, we play far too high up the pitch. And if they've got anybody quick, they just lob the ball up there and boom, they score. And I think maybe that's the problem that we got at home. Because if you look at our away form, it's absolutely... I think we've got one of the best away forms in the league. So it was definitely an issue with the home form. Adam, just to kind of wrap this up, really. I mean, you know, if we'd have won that match, we would have pretty much guaranteed finishing third, wouldn't we? So has it done some damage to us in the race for top four? And I think the other kind of ancillary question on that is that are we having to face facts that right at this moment in time, we are a cup side, not a league challenging side?
I mean, the evidence suggests that is the case. And until Chelsea sort out their home form, which was an issue last year as well, looking back, then there's no way they can challenge for the title, because City and Liverpool are absolutely exemplary at home. They reel off win after win. They do it, like, you know, if you watch the game on Tuesday night, Liverpool were done with Manchester United after about 40 minutes, and then they could coast through that second half and conserve energy. And that's not really what Chelsea do. We are pushed to the 90 minutes. We have to give everything. We can't move into sort of second gear, which is probably then has a knock-on effect in the next game. So, yeah, until Chelsea sort out the home form, until they find that creative player to unlock deep defences, or Tuchel gives his offensive players a little bit more licence to express themselves and maybe be as controlled as he wants, then it's really difficult to see us sort of racking up 12, 13 wins that City and Liverpool managed to do to really chase them down. That being said, you know, I'm sure they'll try next season again. But yeah, there's a lot of big questions that are going to have to be sort of fat answers going to have to be found in the summer. And given everything that's going on, I'm not sure how easy that's going to be in a single summer, but we'll see.
We will indeed. Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I agree to a point, but we've been up until Juventus. Our squad depth is letting us down. Our quality of the squad is letting us down. Because up to Juventus, we were there or thereabouts. We played some amazing football. Then we lost to West Ham, lost Chilwell. We kind of haven't really properly had any momentum since then.
The evidence is in the if you look at the league table that I've got, the disappointing thing is we've won 18 matches, which is the same as Arsenal and Spurs. We've only lost five, which is more comparable to Liverpool and City. But the real problem that we've had is eight draws. And, of course, the majority of them came in December, January, when we were struggling with fatigue and everything else. That's what's cost us the title this season, December and January.
Exactly, but yes, I think, you know, but then had you know, it's buts and maybes. Chilwell not got injured, et cetera, et cetera. James not got injured. Those are two key players. So it's one of those kind of, I think what it means is our squad depth is not good enough. We need to go back to, like, you know, like Liverpool with their front three, they can just rotate and bring on world-class players. They've got a brilliant squad. And I'm going to wash my mouth out with soap when we finished. Same in Man City. We need to really, you know, maybe this new ownership can see a change. I know this is a whole other question. New ownership, a change in kind of transfer policy and just bringing players that managers want.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a chance to just to build, you know, a new dynasty.
We will. Let's hope so.
Sorry, it's we talk about squad depth, but as we were saying earlier, Chelsea have a deep squad in terms of actual human beings who can play football to a decent level. It's just that they are all fundamentally mixed and matched and not of the same profile. And then when someone like a Chilwell gets injured, or going to a Marcus Alonso, who is very, very different in what he can do, and then Tuchel's having to adapt and tweak his system to compensate for that, and then you lose James and you're going to Azpi, and, you know, I know we've spoken about this before, but it's having that joined up and clarity of an idea to work towards and to build towards, and then you can cover injuries in a far, far better way than Chelsea have this season, because it has killed them at times.
Definitely right. Now, talking of the new owners, Adam, I mean, let's talk about the press conference first. If we have time, I'll pick up on a couple of bidding type questions. But what happened at the press today? Anything of note?
Kovacic and Rudiger out of the weekend.
It's bad news.
Yeah, hugely bad news. Along with like Callum and Chilwell, obviously mentioned about the pitch. And then there's a lot of talk about the home form, top four race. I mean, it wasn't probably a vintage Thomas Tuchel press conference, to be fair. You know, he spoke about Chelsea maybe being a bit fragile at the moment at home, and that having to change. But yeah, I mean, it was much of the same, to be honest. A lot of discussion around the home form and having to solve that and not to sort of lose themselves all of a sudden. Although I did think it was a bit strange that Tuchel sort of spoke about all the individual mistakes and errors that have really been costing us, and sort of went, yeah, I don't really know how to stop this, to be honest. And you kind of understand why he said that, because some of the mistakes are not sort of structural issues or a player doing a completely bizarre thing. It is just routine mistakes, like Mendy not being able to play a 10-yard pass to Rudiger or Christensen not being able to play a pass back to Mendy. I mean, these are not wildly bizarre things a player's doing. These are sort of run-of-the-mill in-game things that they should be able to do.
I think that's mental fatigue, Adam. Yes. It goes back to my original point earlier on. And I think that's why he says, I don't know what to do, because he can't suddenly not make them fatigued.
Yes, and there is stuff coming out later tonight. I just took all talking more around all this and whatnot, but you'll have to wait until after.
You've done a piece on it.
Yeah, there's more quotes from Tuchel just around this whole issue of mental fatigue and playing a lot of games and pressure and X, Y, Z. But yeah, I can't obviously read them off verbatim.
People, go and read it later tonight when it comes out at about 10.
Half 10.
Okay, very quickly, JK. Sorry, mate, go on.
It means he's got to keep a balance between getting into the top four and having the best team available for the cup final, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Really. So we may see what we consider weaker teams playing in the league, but he somehow can't have them too weak because they've still got to carry on attempting to get a European place.
Yeah.
Because we do want the best side possible playing in the cup final. Yeah. You really want Kovacic playing. You really want Reece to be playing right wing back. You want Silva and Rudiger to be playing there as well.
Yeah,
definitely. So it's going to be an interesting few weeks of balance.
Definitely. Dan?
I think in terms of the top four, I think we're going to be okay because Arsenal have got to play Man United and Spurs. Spurs have got to play Liverpool and Arsenal. So I think we should be all right for top four, I'd imagine. I think we'll get enough points with the remaining games to get top four. I'm not too worried about that. It's going to be a bit of a Devon Lochtal-style catastrophe. Well,
like last season and the season before, and I was hoping we would avoid that. I mean, I was also hoping that we would actually get enough points to be less than 10 points behind whoever wins it, which I presume will be City, because that shows improvement. But having said that, as I also said on Friday, just take a step back here for a second and look what we've achieved this season, given what's been hurled at us. And actually, it's quite phenomenal if you think about it. Adam, talking of which, there's been a fair bit of news. Every day there seems to be a fair bit of news about what's happening with the various bids. I see that Bowley's hired George Osborne, and weirdly today it was announced that Serena Williams and Lewis Hamilton have pitched in about 10 million quid each to the bid, which, to be honest, is insignificant in terms of the total amount, but it's more significant for other reasons, I think, isn't it?
I mean, it adds a bit of glitz to one of the bids, a bit of, you know, high-profile names. In theory, we were meant to discover who the preferred bidder was by the end of this week. That obviously hasn't happened as of right now, unless Rain Group decide to leave it until last thing on a Friday to get it off their to-do list, which I doubt. So it'll probably be next week. But yeah, I think there's an element of fatigue in terms of this story. And you know, it's impossible to know if this is starting to bleed through to the players and everything, because it does feel like it's been dragging on a long time, even though probably for a multi-billion pound takeover it's actually progressed at a rather rapid pace. But yeah, there's new names added to bids every couple of days now, and I'm going to steal someone's joke and say, you know, the reason they probably want to extend Stamford Bridge at this point is so that everybody within these bids can actually fit in, because it is getting the list of names is just ridiculous on some of them. Like the Pagliuca bid, I'm sure it is a strong bid by all accounts, but there are so many people involved in it. There's no way I can remember them all. So I think it's become the same for the other ones now as well.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that's a problem, having lots of people involved with these bids?
I think it, you know, depends on how it all plays out when it's actually sorted, and whoever it is who does end up owning the club, you could probably get a clearer idea of what roles people play. But I guess from an inexperienced view on this, because obviously I haven't been involved in big business and takeovers and whatnot, as a small journalist in the big cog, I don't know. To me, having lots of different voices potentially is problematic going forward, but it depends how much of a say a lot of these people actually have, and whether or not a lot of them are just there for a small slice of what is there from Chelsea in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? And it does seem to be mad. And by the way, just to make Broughton's brought in the Williams and Hamilton, not Bowley, as I might have erroneously said a minute ago. But for the benefit of Mr. Stick, who's in Mixlr, the random that Bowley has brought in is George Osborne, who used to be the Chancellor of Exchequer of this great country, my friend. And is also a Chelsea season ticket holder and has been for a long time. I remember he was at Munich, for example. So he's not just a random Mr. Stick. Goodness gracious me. Learn your history, mate. Anyway, it's all a bit up in the air, Adam, really, isn't it? That's the reality. And we're not going to know until we know. I mean, you said that the deadline was supposed to be today. I mean, obviously, we might hear next week. We may not. I mean, we've got until the end of May, haven't we? That's when the licence runs out, although they're supposed to be having to give another licence to actually sell the club. It's all so confusing. But I mean, I think the question I'm really asking is, you know, does it really matter? I mean, you know, does it matter whether we find out or it all gets sorted out by the end of May, or does it matter whether it's done like now? I mean, is there an issue with time here?
I think there is, to an extent, of the first team, that this was actually going to always be a very big summer for Chelsea, where big decisions had to be made over big players like Jorginho, like N'Golo Kante, who will only have 12 months left on the contract. Obviously, there's other big issues like Rudiger's contract. Chelsea can't do anything with that at the moment, and they won't be able to until the club is bought. So in that sense, yeah, there is an onus, I feel, for this to be done sooner rather than later, so that the new owners can come in and we can, the club can get a handle on what their approach is going to be, what finances we're going to have, and how we can actually go into what is going to be an important transfer window for us. Who oversees that transfer window? Is it Marina Granovskaya? You know, does she do a handover period? Is it somebody else? Because Marina has her faults and people are very quick to point it out, but she's the person who would have done a lot of work this season, building relationships, speaking to agents, you know, putting feelers out there ahead of this summer window. So if you take that all away, Chelsea's starting from nothing with these people again. So, you know, in my opinion, just from a football perspective, it's important to probably get this done before the end of May, because you don't want to be jumping straight into the transfer window trying to rebuild or refresh a squad for a title challenge when you've just got owners who are sort of unpacking their boxes still.
Yeah, definitely agree with that.
Somebody was saying that Marina, we've got your finger up. We've got it. I can get it. I'm not going to stop for you. It's my turn. No, sorry, Dan. Thank you.
Well, get on with it.
Still there. Fingers still up.
I'm waiting.
Fingers still up. And we got exactly. That's what I thought you were going to do. There is a theory that, in fact, they will try and keep Marina and somebody even said Bruce Buck on. I don't think that's going to happen. Yes, all right, Dan. We know you're in. We're coming in. Yes.
Marina and...
And, well, I was, but you keep putting your finger up. We know you're coming in. You don't have to keep your finger up. Marina was actually going to be kept on by some of the... oh, God, bloody hell, Adam's at it. All right.
Just
yes,
get
right.
on with it. For fuck's sake.
I've given up to the floor. I've given up.
No, I want you to finish, up. But just ignore him and just carry
on. That's it, I've finished. I've nothing to say.
You're right, yes. I've heard, too, that most of the bids want to keep Marina and Buck, and yes. I can understand why they would want to keep Marina. I can understand why they would probably want to keep other executives as well, because there's a need for transition. Right, final word to Dan on this.
No, yeah, pretty much I was going to say, I think whoever comes on board will probably leave the existing board as it is the first 6 months while they get their free under table. Yeah. I can't imagine there'd be any huge wholesale changes straight away.
No.
Maybe it'd be a year before we see any, they get their own bodies in.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think inevitably they will want to put their own people in. Anyway, yeah. This is a story, as we know, that will run and run and run. But we've got to run now because we've got to go to part two. Adam, I mean, you're welcome to stay as you always are, but if you've got to leap off, no problem.
No, I'll stick around.
You're going to stick around? Well, there you go. So I won't thank you for being so brilliant thus far. I can thank you later. Now, before we go to part two, quick shout out for CFC UK, who I'm supposed to be doing an article for sometime tonight. Lord knows when. But I've got one in the pipeline, DJ, honestly. Anyway, you can get this wonderful publication on a match day, of course, by going to the CFC UK store, which is opposite Fulham Broadway Tube. Or you just have to hear the cry of, "Hurry up, it's only a pound," which you'll hear if you walk along Fulham Road to the stadium. But if you can't do that, do not worry. You can subscribe to it by emailing fanzine@cfcuk.net. If you want a subscription in the UK, it's 16 quid. If you're in Europe, it's 35 quid. If you're at the rest of the world, it's 45 quid. If you don't want a hard copy and you just get it emailed to you as a PDF, then it's 6 quid for a digital subscription or a pound each, and you can pay via PayPal. Right, after the break, it will be time for the opposition view. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Cheech.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chich, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great! But I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
Fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to Chidge and the Boys on the Chelsea Football Fancast. Total nutters and proper Chelsea.
footballfancast.com.
Welcome back to the Chelsea Fancast for part two, of course, and we've been a bit lazy recently. We've I've not been getting off my arse and getting guests in. But when it comes to West Ham, I have absolutely no excuse because two great West Ham fans are good mates of mine, and it's now time for this.
The Opposition View.
And the opposition view this week is with the wonderful James Jones from We Are West Ham. Am I right? Have I got it right for once, James?
Yeah, you got that right, Chidge. Bang on, mate.
I have. Yeah. You know, I'm always tempted to call you the West Ham way, which is a completely different one, isn't it?
Oh, definitely don't do that, mate. No, don't do that.
Oh, I'm glad I got it right for once. Anyway, how are you? You well?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. Yeah, just loving life as a West Ham fan at the moment, which is quite rare.
Well, indeed. I mean, I was going to kick off with that, really, because I mean, it's been quite a season for you boys, hasn't it? I mean, most of the season, all the talk's been of, West Ham challenging for the top four. But I mean, that seems to have slipped away. Although I will talk to you about that in a minute. But of course, recently it's all been about the Europa League or the Europa Cup. And of course, I mean, I know you were out at Lyon the other week, which was a tremendous win for West Ham, wasn't it? And I mean, you're now in the semi-final against Eintracht Frankfurt, who we beat in the semi-final when we won the Europa Cup against Arsenal. So I'll talk to you about that as well in a minute. But you must be on cloud nine, and you've got a real sniff of a trophy, right?
Yeah, for the first time since 2006, we've got a real opportunity of actually winning something worthwhile, aside from the Betway Cup, which we've only won maybe twice in.
What about the Intertoto? Didn't you win the Intertoto, mate?
Yeah, we won that in 99. obviously, 2006 was the FA Cup final, which we lost to Steven Gerrard. So
this is
literally the first time, in sort of 18, 19 years that we can really go, yeah, actually, we've got a real chance of actually winning something here. Previously, we have been in other semi-finals of other cups, but never really felt like it was on. And at the moment, it feels like it's on. Particularly with Barcelona losing to Frankfurt in the previous round, it's really opened the door for us to go on. And yeah, we're all just a little bit, obviously living on cloud nine, like you said, but just almost in a bit of shock as well. We're like dazed because 2 years ago when the pandemic started, we were a point above the bottom three. David Moyes had just come back. Everyone was, didn't really know where we were going to go. Accusations of a lack of ambition from the club, of David Moyes coming back And now 2 years later, we're looking for a second consecutive top six finish and a Europa League semi-final. And it's all just happened so quickly that we've not been able to stop and actually take stock of how far the club's come and how far David Moyes has taken. It's pretty mental, really.
Mm. I mean, do you think it's all down to David Moyes' management?
I think 90% of it is. I would say that, the clearest change he's made since he came back was squad togetherness and bringing and building a relationship between the fans and the squad. I can't remember the last time where I had genuine love for about 15 other blokes as I do now. They're just incredible, and there's a mutual respect between the fans, the players and the manager and the coaching staff, which I can't remember ever having as a West Ham fan. And that's one of the big changes he's made. And with that comes confidence for the players. It's a thin squad. It's a tight-knit group of players. There's all these criticisms of not having a big enough squad, not investing enough in the transfer windows. But I think that's worked in his favour a little bit because, with a smaller squad, he can get the best out of them. And, they're just fighting for each other every week. And I think that's all down to him. It's all down to the man management and the work he does on the training pitch. It's mostly down to him, I think, and the fans acknowledge that straight away.
Mm. I mean, talking to the fans, I mean, I think I'm probably going to, and I know what you're going to say here, but, obviously there was a bit, I mean, I know a lot of West Ham fans who are pissed off about having to move to the London Stadium, the Olympic Stadium, call it what you will, because they loved Upton Park and everything that it meant. And it was a horrible place to go. I can vouch for that. Really tight little stadium.
Mm.
And it was a great atmosphere down there, and you've now got 50,000 fans in there every week, which has put you on another level as well, I think. And that can be great, and it can have drawbacks. But what is the atmosphere like there now?
This season, it's been our home for many, many years. Like, you do get game. The Burnley game last weekend, it wasn't fantastic, but the same can be said for Upton Park all those years ago. It wasn't absolutely bouncing, absolutely rocking every single game.
No, exactly.
You needed those big results, big occasions to really make it feel like home. And over the last 5 or 6 years, we've had those big wins. You know, the Sevilla win in the last 16 Europa League was the best night I've experienced over there since we moved. It was absolutely rocking from start to finish. Even before the game, it was absolutely bouncing. And it felt like home. And you don't even think twice about it now. Obviously, you're still pining a little bit for Upton Park, and that's only natural. But it feels a lot more like home now. And that was always going to come with a little bit of success on the pitch. The first 3 years, 4 years of being there, we were in relegation battles. Mm. You know, we had terrible players. We were losing 3-0 at home to Brighton on a Friday night and things like that. And it was like, what was the point of moving? Now we're beginning to see the reasons why the club wanted to move, you know, and beginning to get what we were promised as part of that move, which was success and a bit of a European tour. So it's a lot better now. The atmosphere's a lot better. And long may that continue, mate.
Well, indeed. I think I take your point as well, actually. I mean, I think there's a very interesting dynamic with atmosphere at a lot of clubs, but I mean, we often have a very duff atmosphere if we're not playing somebody, you know, where there's some real jeopardy. You know, if it's like a really big match against a rival, then obviously the atmosphere is great. If you're playing somebody like, you know, Brentford or Stoke or Middlesbrough or whatever, you know, then it's just not the same. So I take your point. Mm. There. I think I'm going to know the answer to this one too, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Would you rather win the Europa Cup or would you rather finish in fourth?
Do you win the Europa League all day long?
Yeah,
of course. All day long. We've not won anything for 40 odd years.
Yeah.
I've not seen anyone, any West Ham captain lift a trophy of any meaning in my lifetime, apart from a couple of playoff trophies and a Betway Cup and an Intertoto Cup certificate, which you reminded me of earlier. So, yeah, all day long, Europa League. Mm. Like, we didn't expect to be where we are now. Let's go for it. Let's get that trophy.
Yeah, I mean, it stands to reason, doesn't it? I mean, not least, of course, because if you do win it, you'll get in the Champions League anyway. So
yeah.
you don't even need to finish in the top four. I can understand. I mean, yeah, trophies all day long. I think anybody, I mean, only Arsenal fans would say I'd rather finish top four because they're weird and they drink lattes. But there you go. I mean, the reality is, though, James, I mean, the league form's been struggling a bit recently. You've had one win in four league matches recently. So, you know, it looks like finishing fourth might be a step too far this season. Plus the fact, of course, us managing to screw up completely against Arsenal has let them back in. And Spurs, you know, they're there or thereabouts. So, my fear about West Ham coming to the Bridge is the same as I say to you every year when we do this spot, James, is that you will turn up because it's us, because it's at Stamford Bridge, you'll turn into 1970s Brazil and squeak a 1-0 win or something. But, I mean, I do wonder about it this time. I mean, we've clearly got quite a few problems ourselves before we even think about West Ham. But I know that you've got a lot of your defence are injured. I know that Antonio's, you know, hit a bit of a dip in form. I also know that you're playing Eintracht Frankfurt next Thursday. So I kind of do wonder if this is a good time to play you and that you might have one eye on the Europa Cup next Thursday. So what do you think?
I definitely think it is a good time to play us. You mentioned the defensive injuries. Mm-hmm. That's a real big blow for us. One fit centre-back in Craig Dawson, who, by the way, is...
Ballon Dawson.
Ballon Dawson. He's just been absolutely... What, £2 million he cost us and he's been outrageous. But I think now we're beginning to see, and I think it was quite evident in the Burnley result last weekend, was coupled with a little bit of tiredness from Thursday night. But I think David Moyes is now going to go all out for the Europa League. I think, as you rightly said, top four is probably gone. We can still finish in the top six, but it doesn't really matter if we go all out for the Europa League. And the Europa League's certainly winnable with the three other teams that are still in it. And I think that's going to be the focus, not just with David Moyes, but the players as well. They know what they can potentially achieve. And if they can achieve that, then what they do in the league doesn't really matter. But I'd still like to see us finishing at least the top seven and qualify for Europe again, even if it's for the Conference League. I don't really care whether it's the Conference League or whatever. But with that in mind, I do think it's a good time to play us. Antonio, actually 4 goals in 30 games, I think he scored for us. There's a possibility with the injuries that Declan Rice could go back into midfield, which of course means... in defence, which of course means that, you know, we lose what he gives us in the middle of the park. So, yeah, I'm a little bit worried going into this one purely because of everything I've just said. But at the same time, I watched Chelsea on the other night against Arsenal and I thought to myself, doesn't matter how badly we play. I think we've got a chance here. We've got a chance.
Mate, you're right. If we play anything as badly as we did against Arsenal on Sunday, then we are in serious trouble. And, I mean, he picked the wrong side for a start. I'm kind of done with Christensen, if the truth were to be told. And I mean, I know his mistake led to the first goal, obviously, which doesn't help. Sarr, I just don't think he's good enough to play for Chelsea. And I think the problem that we have is that we've got a lot of very knackered players. And I think we're beginning to reap the whirlwind of what happened in December, you know, when we had so many games to cram in the space of about 6 weeks. So we never got the chance to rest players. Then we also got players who were injured. Then we got players who were out with COVID. So a lot of players have had a lot of miles in their legs this season. And I'm thinking of players like Jorginho. I'm thinking of players like Kante, Mason Mount even, although he doesn't ever seem to get tired. Silva's, you know, 36, so it's tough to play him every game. So, you know, we've got a lot of very knackered players. We've got a lot of injuries too. Kovacic is out. He's a massively key player for us. Chilwell, you obviously know about. Rudiger was missing against Arsenal, which was massive for us. And he may well be missing again on Sunday because he's got a groin issue. So we've got injuries, we've got fatigue, and we've got some players who are just not good enough. I think if anything, what Wednesday revealed was that actually our squad depth is not as good as people were saying it was. We've got an amazing first kind of 13, 14 players, and we can beat anybody in the world on our day with those players. But you lose a few key players and suddenly, you know, it looks a bit shaky. So you've got to catch us at the right time. And who knows whether you will. I was thinking, actually, it's interesting, isn't it, talking about Declan Rice having to maybe play in defence instead of midfield. And, you know, looking at that game for Chelsea against Arsenal, it was crying out. We are crying out for a player like Declan Rice. And I know everybody talks about it and all the rest of it. I mean, my own view, James, is that we won't be able to afford him because you'll charge so much, we'll be priced out.
Yeah.
But we are crying out for a player like him because you look at Kante and Loftus-Cheek in midfield against Arsenal, for God's sake. Arsenal, of all people. And they've just overrun in midfield. That's why you had the problems in defence. And it's also why we have the problems in attack as well, because our midfield is a real problem. And what we don't have is a destroyer in that midfield. We don't have somebody who can win the ball and then move forward. We've got Jorginho who can control a game and pass it sideways and backwards until we all fall asleep. We've got Loftus-Cheek, who's 1 minute great, next minute not so good. We've got Kante, who's, I think, I think he's a bit injury-plagued at the moment because he's been so overplayed. We're missing Kovacic. So, you know, if we had a Declan Rice in that midfield, we could play 4-3-3, and I think you'd see a very different Chelsea then. So it's quite ironic that we're talking about Rice. Anyway, enough of me. I've invited you on to talk about West Ham, not me to talk about Declan Rice needing to play for Chelsea. I mean, you know my little kind of idea that I always get very worried when West Ham come and play Chelsea. I mean, the reality is you've only won one of the last 16 matches at Stamford Bridge. You've drawn 4 and lost 11. Now, if you told me that, if you'd have told me that, I'd have laughed at you. Because every time I see us play West Ham, I shit myself. Because I think you're going to beat us by 1-0 or something else. Or it's just going to... You know, I always get worried playing West Ham. Because they always turn up. That's what I think. But the stats say different.
Yeah, I think Stamford Bridge has never been a good place for us to go. But we seem to be a lot better at home against you. But the thing about West Ham this season is that... And this is another thing that David Moyes has done somehow, is that we don't get turned over by anyone. No one, you know, even if they're knackered, i.e. the Brentford game and the Burnley game recently, after Europa League games or, you know, injury crisis and all the rest of it, we don't get turned over. know, even in years gone by, you'd look at this game as a West Ham fan and go, we could lose this one 4-5-0. Doesn't matter whether Chelsea are out of form, whether they've just been beaten by Arsenal and they've got their own injury problems. You know, we're going to lose this 4-5-0 and it's going to be terrible. Now you go into it, go, okay, well, we might not win, but we're not going to get turned over. And that then allows us to still be in games and still catch teams.
Well, like
on
the 3-2.
Like the 3-2. We just don't get turned over. And I hope I'm not jinxing that now. But it's something that we've been saying all season, is that, you know, with the pace of Bowen going forward and Declan Rice in midfield, if he plays there at the weekend, Antonio, who, yeah, okay, he's not scoring, but does a very good job of pulling defenders all over the pitch and allowing the likes of Bowen, Lanzini, Benrahma to get into space. We've got a chance. We've definitely got a chance. Probably more so than in previous seasons, I think, even when you consider the fact that we've got pretty much both eyes on another competition and we've got no defence. So that's what I'm clinging on to at the weekend, mate, is that, you know, the fact that we don't get thrashed anymore, yeah, which was always a problem at West Ham for many years, it means that we're always in games, and that means that we've always got a chance of taking something away from difficult places or notoriously bad places for us to go.
Yeah, I mean, the bridge, I don't think, is the fortress it used to be, certainly if you judge by this and the last season. But do you think Moyes will pick his strongest team? And if not, who's likely to be the biggest threat to us then?
He will go as strong as he possibly can. That's another thing that we've noticed, is that even when, I mean, he's got a thin squad anyway, so he can't really rotate that much. But even when you think, okay, he might rest a few players, we've got Europa League game coming up on Thursday, he hasn't. You know, the game before, the Brentford game before we played Lyon in the second leg, he was playing Zouma, Declan Rice, Jared Bowen. Zouma got injured in that game, unfortunately, but, you know, it was a full strength 11 at Brentford. So I think it will be as strong as he can go. The big question mark is where Declan Rice plays. But the key man for us is Jared Bowen at the moment. Like, he's just on fire, mate. Like, and he scored 15 goals already this season. That's more than anyone has in one season for us for about 15 years, which is mad in itself when you think about it. And he's just in really, really good form. And regardless of what side of the pitch he plays on, you know, he can score with both feet. He's tricky. He's pacey. And he'll finish from anywhere. So get him on the ball and we've got an opportunity. And he's one that I think particularly I'm looking at with, you mentioned earlier, Christensen, potentially no Rudiger. There's a Chelsea defence there that Jared Bowen might be looking at and going, yeah, I can have a bit of luck today. I could have a bit of luck if I get on it. So, and I'm sure the players in and around him will be thinking exactly the same thing.
Well, indeed. I mean, I would imagine he'll start on the right. I mean, you'd be stupid not to, really.
And yeah.
I mean, even, I mean, the team I've put out, I desperately want to see us play 4-4-3. Well, basically it's 4-3-1-2, but 4-3-3 and old money, because I just don't think we've got enough. If I'm assuming Rudiger won't play, so I've got Silva and Chiloba as the central defenders, James on the as the right back, and Alonso as the left back, because that is basically the only choice we have. And Alonso is a fine player, but he's rubbish defensively. That's why he has to normally play as a left wing back. So, you know, I mean, you can't play Saar again. I mean, he was awful against Arsenal, so surely he can't play. So basically, you've got Bowen against Alonso, which scares the shit out of me. I mean, we had Saka against Alonso on Wednesday, and that was bad enough. So it is a worry. But I do think that we'd probably be better suited to that. But, you know, he's bound to play 4-3-3 and do something completely different. But yeah, Bowen, I think, is a real worry for us. I'm not so sure about Antonio, although he might raise his game against us. He has done in the past. How do you think it's going to go, mate?
I think it'd be tight. Like I said, we're very difficult to beat. Even, you know, even in the games that we have lost this season, it's not been easy for anyone to do that. So I think it'd be tight. I'll certainly take a point now, given our injury situation at the back. I see us allowing Chelsea to have a lot of the ball and catching Chelsea on the break. That's where we've had a lot of our success over the last 2 years, particularly away from home against better teams. You know, we're quite happy to soak up pressure. even with a makeshift defence on Sunday, I still think that'll be the way that they'll go. And it will just soak up a little bit of pressure and then catch on the break with the pace of Benrahma, Bubb and Antonio. And we'll try and get something that way, I think. And that will suit us down to the ground, I think.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's one of the reasons why I've gone 4-3-1. Well, he likes playing basically Mount behind Werner and Havertz. If Lukaku starts, I'll disappear. I'll emigrate or something. But, you know, I'm presuming he'll pick Werner and Havertz and Mount up front. But I think if you play Jorginho in the middle of the three, then you've also got him to basically shield the back four, because I think we're going to need that. Because the way you play, I think you play, what, 4-2-3-1? Mm. You know, we could get outnumbered in that kind of area if we're not careful. And that's kind of what happened against Arsenal, really. You had Loftus-Cheek and Kante bombing forward all the time, and you know, they just countered us, and we were just picked off. Mm. So hopefully I think he'll do what Uncle Chidge says, you know, because I clearly know far more about management and coaching than Thomas Tuchel, obviously, you know.
But yeah.
That's my hope, but we shall see. Because I think it's going to be a tough game for us. I really do. But what are you going to go for score wise?
I've gone for draw on the charity bet, so I'll say 1-1.
Yeah,
I'll go 1-1.
Yeah, all right. I've gone 2-1 in mine, and I think I said 2-1 to Will the other day on you know, your equivalent of doing this, which basically, because we do this predictions league. With the Fancast has got its own league, and that is a percentages prediction. It really is. I mean, you know, exactly. It's damage limitation. So I really have no idea, but I'm going to go for 2-1 for us. But there we go. We'll find out on Sunday afternoon, won't we, James?
Yeah, we'll find out. Strangely, not. Actually, I'm looking forward to it, but I've kind of, like the team probably have, I just want to get out of the way because I want next Thursday to come. Yeah. I'm just so excited about that. So
is it the home leg first or are you away first?
It's the home leg first, so I'll be going to that.
Yeah.
And then away the week later, which I'm not going to. I'm gambling with the final. I've booked up for Seville on the final, which means I've not been able to find the money for Frankfurt. So I've gambled with that.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, that's a bummer. That
they are
quite a tough side, Frankfurt. When they came over to play us in the semi final, I think we were away in the first leg, and it was quite a tense match over there. And then when we had them over at the Bridge, I mean, this sounds a bit wanky, really, but you know, we're used to watching, you know, semi finals in the Champions League at Chelsea, so. The Europa Cup semi was not the draw it might have been, if you see what I mean.
Mm.
And Frankfurt fans, I mean, they're nuts. But loads of them got tickets. They were all over in hospitality. They managed to get a massive little pocket in the West Lower, you know, because basically people were just flogging their tickets and they were getting hold of them. So they do anything they can to get in, and they'll bring a lot of people. I mean, they had 30,000 people went over to the Camp Nou, didn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of West Ham fans are worried about that.
I don't think you'll be flogging your tickets to them like we were, though.
No, but there's been a lot of fans that have been to every game and still didn't manage to get tickets for this one. The ticket site crashed when it went on to general sale. And there's a lot of uproar about that. And now there's a ticketing website flogging tickets on there for about £300 a pop. And now West Ham fans are like, well, if there's a load of Frankfurt fans in the home end, then we know exactly what's happened there. Yeah. But there is a bit of a worry. But at the same time, we've been trying to do that in every away leg. We've been trying to get home in tickets because there's been not enough away tickets. So, you know, you can't really blame them for trying to get a ticket for this, really. So as long as it's not 30,000, which would be a little bit worrying.
Yeah.
I don't mind if it's your one or two. It just adds to the atmosphere, doesn't it?
Well, it does indeed. Well, look, either way, mate, I wish you absolutely no luck on Sunday, obviously. But I do wish you a lot of luck against Frankfurt. And actually, I hope you win the Europa Cup. Actually, I think that'd be great for you lot, and I wouldn't begrudge you that at all. So I wish you all the best with that. And
thanks, mate.
No doubt, I will. We won't be playing you again this season, so I won't see you until next season, unless I do creep up to Snack Media and have a beer with you and Martin and Niall, which I would love to do, as I said earlier on. So enjoy the rest of the season. Good luck for the Europa Cup, and thanks for coming on as always, James.
Pleasure, Chidge. Thanks, mate.
Fans, real opinions. I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Football Fancast. chelseafootball.com.
Okay, welcome back. This is Stamford Chidge and the Chelsea Fancast, and we're now in part three. We just had a brilliant, brilliant opposition view with James Jones from We Are West Ham, and as always, I am aided and abetted by the effervescent, sometimes a little bit prickly, but nevertheless very lovable Jonathan Kidd.
Oh, really? Prickly? Me?
Prickly.
What?
Prickly,
what,
yes.
What are you saying?
Prickly. Prickly.
Prickly.
Prickly. Like a fucking hedgehog,
man. Finger up all the time. It's almost pointing at my face.
Well, just ignore it. Ignore it.
I can't ignore it. I'm gonna mask him. I'm masking him.
Yeah, but you see, every time you draw attention to it, you go on for longer. Whereas, and then you forget your point. And then you forget your point.
I just said, well, Marina is the fingers up. Hang on, it's like, you know.
I know. Well, if you ignored it, you'd actually finish your point, and then anyway.
No, I can only mask. I can only. He comes forward to the screen with the finger, and the finger takes over the screen. It's just.
All right.
You're professional, anyway. JK. Hello. Come on.
Anyway, JK, hello. As always, good to see you. I missed you last Tuesday, and of course, the previous Friday. Dan, haven't seen you for ages. Lovely to see you as always.
Good to be here.
And I'm even more delighted, don't take this personally, folks, but I'm even more delighted to say that we still have Adam Newson with us, which is a rarity, but very, very pleasant for us all. Good to see you too, Adam.
Thank you very much, Chidge. Good to see you too.
And Adam has been very judicious about putting his hand up. I'll just have that noted for the record. Anyway, we're now going to talk about the Chelsea versus West Ham game ourselves. And as ever, I have done a team selection for you all. Now, one thing I didn't talk about in part one, which is something I did again talk about on Friday, but I have a suspicion that one of the other things that went wrong on Wednesday night against Arsenal was the fact that we had a two-man midfield of Kante and Loftus-Cheek, which basically was either bypassed or just went through like a knife through butter. Nobody did any defending. The back three were not shielded at all. And as ever, there was, you know, about as much creativity going up front as there always is. Although I thought Werner had a good game. And I was saying on Friday, I think that Tuchel really does want to play 4-3-2-1-2 or 4-3-3 if you prefer, rather than 3-4-3. And I think given the issues that we've got with our wing backs and also our central defenders at the moment, I can see the sense in that. So I've gone for basically a 4-3-1-2, because I know he likes to play Mount behind Werner and Havertz, and I've got no problem with that. Some people might even say that this is 4-diamond-2. Remember that one from the 90s, people? Yes, indeed. Anyway, so this is what I'm going for. And this is obviously taking account of the fact that Kovacic and Rudiger are both out injured. So, Mondi in goal. Silva and Chaloba will be our centre-backs and a back four, because I don't want to see Christensen play again. Reece James plays right back, because I still think he's better than Aspie there, really. Alonso has to play left back because there is no alternative. There is nobody else who can play that. Much as the thought of Bowen rinsing him is going to scare the shit out of me, but Alonso it is. And then I've got a three-man midfield because I think this is where it might really help. We know Kovacic is out, so it's basically Kante, Jorginho, Loftus-Cheek. But I think we do need Jorginho in there, and I think in a 4-3-1-2, what Jorginho can do, he can be much more defensive. He can more or less shield the back four, which is what I think he'll have to do, actually. And we know his distribution's much better. And yet you've still got two midfield players who can go forward. We know that Loftus-Cheek and Conte can both do that. And I think that that's what we need. If you've got Mount effectively at the tip of that diamond, that provides a nice link between the midfield and Werner and Havertz. And we know that Mount can pretty much play anywhere across that area. So, yeah, Conte, Jorginho, Loftus-Cheek, Mount, Werner, Havertz. I commend this to the house, JK.
I think he'll play James where he played him before, because I still don't think he thinks he's fit. Chalabar is on the naughty step for having turned up late. I'm not convinced that he'll pick him because I think he thinks his attitude is wrong. I think he'll give Kepper a go because I think Mandi is looking decidedly iffy in all areas at the moment, other than his ability to save the ball wonderfully. I just think he might give him a go. I don't think there'll be any memories of his error against West Ham before, but I just feel he might change it round there. I think he'll play five. I think he'll play Saul on the left instead of Alonso or Pulisic, one of the two. Yeah.
just because I think Alonso is such a strange player, isn't he? In that he excels in some games and we think, blimey, he's a terrific player, isn't he? Like, wonderful against Madrid. I suppose it's because he spends most of his time attacking. But every time he gets defensive, I think Alonso would get completely rinsed by what's his face?
Jim Bowen.
But so I think he'll play somebody. I think he'll just play somebody who's quicker. And I think it's either Saul or Pulisic for me. I think he'll play Kante and Jorginho. I think he'll play, because you've got the five, he'll play Jorginho and Kante. And I have to say, I thought Cheek was terrible.
Yep.
In the Arsenal game. Agreed. Absolutely terrible. And considering he'd been, praised to the skies for his performance against Palace with his goal, then he did look good coming forwards. But we were back into a world of worrying whether he was in fact good enough to play for Chelsea, which has been my fear all season. And I think he'll play Mount, Havertz and Werner, exactly as you say, because even Havertz's cameo when he came on instead of Lukaku, he just creates so much space and movement. It's fantastic. I thought Mount has been, you talk about effervescent. I think Mount has been effervescent every game. And I think he keeps going. And I think Mount is just a joy to watch, the effort he puts in. And Werner is surprising us all. As you say, Chidge, he had a decent game against Arsenal. At least he looked to be able to control the ball better. He ran to situations. He had a couple of shots that were unfortunately had decent blocks to them, but he looks much more confident than he has been. So I think I would agree with those three there. But I don't think he'll play Alonso. I think he'll play five, and he'll play Pulisic or Saul down there.
So who are the three centre-backs then?
James, Silva and...
Christensen.
Oh, who was he? And Christensen, yeah.
So he'll have Aspie as playing right wing back like he did the other night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I think will happen.
So JK's not buying my 4-3-1-2. Dan, what about you?
I agree with JK. I don't think he'll
Thanks,
play
Dan.
Kepa.
I like you too a lot.
Yeah. I think he's already said that Mendes is goalkeepers. I don't think he'll play Kepa. I think he might well play Pat Pulisic for the pace to cope with Bowen. I don't think Sal will play. Although you might surprise and throw Sal in at the starting point alongside Jorginho. Who knows? I think the front three pick themselves. Timo's really found some form. He's looking like the player we wanted to sign. He's a lot confident and good since the Hampton game. So I think, I think Pulisic wing back. Is Callum fit or is he still out? Adam, he's out. Yeah. So yeah, Pulisic wing back. I don't think he'll play Reece James wing back. I think he'll play centre back as well. So it's Reece James, Silva. Maybe Chalobah will get a game again. Maybe he's made his penance.
I hope so. Yeah.
We need somebody to cope with Antonio's pace down the middle.
We do. And strength. Yeah. It's not a game for Christensen if Antonio's playing.
No, Christensen, I've always said Christensen's not physically strong enough to play in the two. And I think he's quite weak for centre-half.
Yeah.
Always maintain that he's not physically imposing centre-back.
Yeah, definitely. Adam, what about you? My last chance for redemption here for my 4-3-1-2. Are you a fan or are you saying it's going to be 3-4-3 again?
I mean, I like your team, but I imagine Tuchel will probably go at the three. I'm not quite sure where this Chalobah being on the naughty step has come from.
I think I read it in football.london.
Did you?
I think I'm only joking. I actually think I might have done, funnily enough. I certainly read something somewhere along the line. It'd been late. I can't believe that my only source is Jonathan. Otherwise, I'm in trouble.
No, I'm going to have to try and find this out because I've not heard that.
Arrived late. He was late for training. He was late for training, Adam, and was that's why he wasn't picked the other day.
I'll look into this.
I wasn't supposed to say that.
I've heard it somewhere else because it wasn't from you, because I haven't spoken to you for a week. So anyway, we digressed. Adam, carry on.
No, I would imagine it would be Mendy in goal, Chalobah right centre back. No, actually, Aspie right centre back, Silva centre, and Chalobah on left. Which he did play last season on when he was on loan. Reece right wing back. Honestly, midfield, I really don't know. Part of me just thinks he'll go with Kante and Jorginho as a let's get back to basics, almost what's worked before really well. And then Marcos left wing back, and then Mount, Havertz and Werner are pretty much the non-negotiables up front at the moment. Yeah,
definitely are. Well, I normally get it completely wrong. I've just got a real bee in my bonnet about this four, having three in midfield, because, and I think actually against this West Ham side, it'll be particularly important because they play 4-2-3-1. There's a chance that because they don't actually have a defence at the moment, I mean, half of their defence are injured. There's a chance, and as you know, because James was saying in part two that he thinks that Declan Rice might actually end up playing in defence for them. They're so strapped at the moment. But nevertheless, they do normally play 4-2-3-1. And they're you know, Bowen, Lanzini, I can't remember who else plays there now, but, you know, that's quite a handful. And it's quite a handful in an area where we are often found to be weak. So I felt that if you had Jorginho literally playing as a deep-lying central midfielder and shielding our back four, let's say, or back two, then I think it might give us some protection against them in that vital area. But like we were saying, the real worry is Bowen, because he's in good form for West Ham at the moment. He scored something like 15 goals, according to James. So we need our left side absolutely at its best. And if it's got Alonso in there, I'm not entirely convinced that it will be, certainly from a speed point of view. But there you go. JK.
You don't want to play Malang Sarr at left back, Chidge.
Frankly, mate, I'm sorry. He impressed me a few times earlier on in the season. But after that display against Arsenal, I just don't think he's good enough, mate. He's not good enough for Chelsea. You know, and I think this is the problem that Tuchel finds himself in. I'm a bit disappointed actually that he's resorting to players like Sarr when maybe he could be playing some players from the youth team, some of the younger guys. But there you go. What I was going to say really, JK, is that West Ham. It's funny, isn't it, with West Ham? Every year we do this show and we come around to West Ham, I shit my pants because I think that they're going to turn up and play like 1970s Brazil and nick a 1-0 win. And I've got it in my head that that's what they always do. But the truth of the matter could not be more different, in fact. They have actually won one of the last 16 head-to-heads at Stamford Bridge. They've drawn four and lost 11. So where I get it in my head that West Ham are going to turn up to Stamford Bridge and play brilliantly, like their cup final, and nick a win, I don't know. But that's the impression I always have.
I think it was Chicharito coming on and scoring for them. Do you remember?
Yeah, when, I sat with Tony that day. I sat with Tony that day. Predicted it.
We all had the same telepathic thought at the same time, thinking he's coming on, he'll score, absolutely. And of course he did. And I think they won then. Didn't they win in that game?
Yeah, they either drew. I don't think it's on our little sheet.
No, it was a draw, 2-2, I think it was.
Yeah. They got a result out of it, that's for sure.
They got a result, yeah.
Wasn't that the one where Hazard scored that absolute... You know, go on, mate, I can't remember anyway.
I was going to say, wasn't the game where Avin Martin's son played his one and only game for them?
Oh, yeah, mate, it might have been, yeah. But, as I said, they've only drawn four in the last 16 at the Bridge, so, again, that's a spurious... we have this weird view about them, I think. JK... I have a theory, and it'd be interesting to hear what Adam says about this as well, but I have a theory that they might have one eye on the Europa League. I mean, as you've all just heard, James is way more pumped up for Eintracht Frankfurt than he is for playing us on Sunday, and normally he'd be very pumped up for playing us. So, Adam, I mean, they have got Eintracht Frankfurt next Thursday. They are all absolutely desperate to do well in that competition and win it. So do you think that Moyes might have one eye on it? And they don't have a very deep squad, so... And they've got half a defence, so maybe they've got more problems than we have at the moment.
Potentially. The fact it's on the Thursday evening, though, probably gives them enough time to play a decent strength side for this one and turn it around for Thursday and still not have any issues. So, I mean, it's difficult to know. Might be a distraction. Players may be sort of, you know, not fully 100% committed for it. But the way West Ham have played this season has been really impressive. You know, they've had full commitment in every game. So I don't know. I would be wary going into this game if I was a Chelsea player, thinking that any West Ham player would have half an eye on Eintracht Frankfurt, just because West Ham aren't entirely out of the top four race. I think they're 5 points off. So if they lose this one, they probably are. So it's a difficult one for them. But yeah, I wouldn't go into it thinking that, that West Ham will have a half an hour on nine track, to be completely honest, because I think then you're setting yourself up for a fall.
Well, we will.
They'll step up anyway, won't they? Well, step up anyway, won't they, West Ham? Well, because they're playing Chelsea. They always do.
I agree.
They did it at the London Stadium. Yeah. They stepped up. They played much better than they played in previous matches. And also, their fans will be absolutely up for it because it's Chelsea. And they'll try and keep them going and buoy them up because they are very loud in the similar way to the Arsenal were.
Well, Arsenal are not normally really loud. But they were on Wednesday.
Because we're missing 10,000 fans.
Away fans are, yeah, and also we didn't have a full complement, did we? So it made sense that they got through. But also they were winning and scoring goals. It affects the way the crowd reacted. Well, there were lots of people saying we were very subdued, you know.
Yeah, so, well, I was going to ask you that. The crowd was subdued. I couldn't be there because I was still in bed with COVID. Although I snuck out and watched it on a dodgy stream up in my office because I wasn't allowed in the living room for fear of infecting my wife. But I was going to ask you this because you and Dan and Adam were all there on Wednesday. And, you know, we know West Ham are going to be really up for it. And they turn up, you know, and make a big noise usually when they come to the bridge. Do you think that's going to make a difference on Sunday? Do you want to answer that, Dan?
I don't know. It's difficult. I think it's... depends how the game starts. If Chelsea go on the front foot and start aggressively, then, you know, get an early goal, it changes the whole dynamic of the match. I still think players' mentality for West Ham is it's a European semi-final. They're not going to be 100% committed, I don't think. I just think it's, for most of these players, this is the biggest game of their career. It's a European semi-final. Yes, they're at home, so they've got to travel. I just think they might be distracted. And as they said, they're half their defence is missing. We need to go at it, go early, go aggressive. Shut them up very quickly, very early, put the game to bed, and that changes the whole dynamic of the game. I just think we've got to be like Southampton, super aggressive, right at it for the first minute, and kill the game before they get a chance to, you know, impact with their noise. Listen, we're missing 10,000 fans, it's going to make a huge difference.
Did it make a difference on Wednesday, do you think?
I don't know, it's difficult to say. I mean, it was fits and starts, the songs. There were a lot of songs, you know, Champions of Europe, we never sing that. Just like the old days, there's nobody here. You know, Arsenal were more noisy because there were 10,000 less Chelsea fans in the ground. I think that's a bit of a fallacy, saying they were particularly noisy. They got, you know, it's difficult to say. I think we just need to go at it, aggressive, straight from the off, on the front foot, get an early goal, change the whole crowd dynamics. We need to win this one, need to win it. And I think West Ham's minds will be on Thursday. Really, I just think players' mentalities are, you know what, we're not going to get top four. Although we have a chance, we're not going to get top four. The Europa League is their best chance of getting the Champions League, and they've got a great chance of winning it.
Yeah, absolutely. JK?
It was sort of equal noise at the beginning, except there, as you say, Dan, that one, just like the old days, there's nobody here, which they just kept singing over and over and over again, tediously. But I think it really helps away support. If the first goal you give away is a complete clanger like we had, because they then, yeah, there's a lot of laughter involved in their crowing, which they're very good at, all the Arsenal fans, and they crowed an enormous amount. And I'm afraid when the own goal went in, I felt there was a kind of, oh my God, how many more times are we going to be doing this? Is this kind of a regular occurrence now? And I felt that because the team played so badly, there's always seems to be a correspondence with the crowd. People always say, yeah, but when your team's down, you should get after them. That's when you're a true supporter. It doesn't happen like that. If your team's playing badly, I'm afraid you do not make much noise. That's what happens. And that's what happened in the game. So that's why there was this disparity between the two sets of supporters. Obviously, it was affected by the fact there were less Chelsea supporters in the ground, but the Arsenal were very loud because we were because of the stupid goal and the fact that they scored, you know, they kept scoring. I mean, it was as obvious as that, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a really valid point, to be honest. I mean, Adam, what did you think about the atmosphere on Wednesday? And leading into, is this a must-win for Chelsea as well, I think?
Yes, it is a must-win for Chelsea because we don't want to slip back into that top four race. There is that little gap at the moment. I think it's 5 points. But the last thing I think Chelsea need is another run in where it's uncertain and every game is important. And it would be nice just to go into the last game of the season with the pressure off and you can actually have a good time at the game and not have to be concerned. In terms of the atmosphere, I think I agree with Dan. You know, there were fits and starts. You know, there was some noise at some points, some good noise at some points, and then other points, you know, in the second half, obviously, it did dip off. I don't know. There was a bit of a subdued atmosphere at points, and, you know, this maybe reading too much into it, but I don't know. Maybe some supporters are a bit weary given everything else that's going on as well around the club. It is, you know, you arrive at Stamford Bridge and you see all these empty seats. It's a very strong reminder of there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment in terms of that side of it. So, but who knows? I'm playing amateur psychologist. I should probably leave that to the actual professional.
Well, it's thank you. Thank you.
Yes, one last thing. I cannot find anything about Trevor Chalobah arriving late.
Well, maybe we made it up and we're trying to start some fake news. And I've heard that from somewhere, and it wasn't from Jonathan because I haven't seen him for a couple of weeks. So it couldn't have been just me nicking it from him. Now, what was I going to say? Yes, I think it's a very interesting point, one that we have overlooked a bit, perhaps. And I mean, I remember we did talk about it after the international break, because I was saying that, you know, Tuchel had done this amazing job of keeping them all in a bubble until the international break. So, you know, they seemed to be fairly unharmed by what was going on, or unaffected by what was going on with the selling of the club. And then they went off on their international breaks and they're talking to all their other players, you know, people who play for other teams. They're in a bit of banter and suddenly they're aware of the shitstorm that we're in. And maybe that pricked that bubble a bit. And maybe Tuchel's found it harder to kind of, you know, corral them all back together and keep them shielded from that. So I wonder if both the team and he are now actually beginning to be affected by what's going on. I mean, I don't know is the honest answer, Adam, but you seem to be alluding to it.
No, I was saying just more from a fan weariness almost of it all. I think
the fans are.
Well, just a little bit, because, you know, it's been going on a long time now, and you know, as a supporter, you want to know what direction your club is going in, and still, you know, that we don't know what direction it's going to be going in come the next sort of 6 weeks. So maybe there is an element of that. In terms of the players, I think Tuchel would dismiss that pretty quickly, to be honest, if you asked him it. No matter even if there is an element of truth to it now, I think he would say no. You know, nothing's changed here at Cobham. There's no reason. But, you know, the longer it drags on, the more uncertain certain players' futures become, like Rudiger, and I don't know, maybe it does start to seep in for a while, but it's not something I've heard, and I'm sure it's not something Tuchel would agree with if you asked him, to be honest.
Yeah, I think the players know what's going on. I mean, they've got their phones, they've got everything there. They're not going to be oblivious to what's going on. So whether, you know, it affects them or not, I don't know. But I think from a sports perspective, it's incredibly unsettling. And, you know, people who've got years and years and years of involvement, having this, we never had this uncertainty before, ever. And maybe go back to the sort of the Bulstrode, Marlow State days when they were trying to rebuild Stamford Bridge. But this is the first time in 30, 35, 40 years, you know, the existence of the club has been threatened, actually, you know, physically threatened. And it is emotional for a lot of people right now, because, you know, there may not be a Chelsea Football Club. I know that's massively dramatic. There is a possibility there might not be a Chelsea Football Club come next August. So, you know, fans are probably emotionally drained. I mean, I know I am. The last sort of, you know, 4 or 5 weeks for the stuff we've been doing on the trust and so on, I'm like literally emotionally, you know, it's been tough. It's been very tough for all Chelsea supporters right now, because it's a huge, huge situation. We want some clarity. We want to get this ownership taken over so we can go back to talking about football and ridiculous transfer rumours. So, you know, the sooner this is done, the better.
Yeah, I mean, I take your point, mate, because I don't know. I mean, I've kind of, you know, inadvertently been out of the game for a couple of weeks thanks to getting COVID, but there is an attritional quality about this. I mean, we were talking to Adam, weren't we, in part one about the fact that it just, we don't quite know when it's going to be over yet, and time is an issue. But there is something quite attritional about it. Maybe our experience of it, Dan, is a little bit different from other people's, because we've been so involved with it, you know, because of the trust dealings. But I can understand why there's a bit of a malaise around the support at the moment. And there's no human being, just to keep Adam happy with a bit of psychotherapy, but no human being likes uncertainty or change. And we are in the middle of a massive, massive, massive dump of uncertainty. And we know for sure as eggs that we are going to have some change. So maybe that is affecting the support. Anyway, enough of all of that. I need some predictions from you lovely people. Adam first. How do you see it going? What do you think the score's going to be?
I'm going to go 2-1 Chelsea. I don't think it's going to be overly pretty, but I hope / suspect that they will get the job done just about.
Yeah, I think you see 2-1's what I call in Prem predictions, Chelsea fan cast Prem predictions terms, I call that the percentages prediction. And actually, that's exactly what I'm going for, Adam, because basically I have no bloody idea. So I'm just saying, I think and I hope Chelsea will win, but I think it'll be tight and I don't really know. So I'm totally with you there, mate. Dan, what about you, mate?
I'm going for a 2-0 win. I think West Ham will be a little bit distracted by Thursday. I think we'll just have enough to win 2-0.
2-0. So 2-1, 2-1, 2-0. JK, please give me at least a 4-0 to make me happy.
2-2.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Explain.
I don't think we'll play well enough. I think there's a problem playing at home. I don't think that we'll play well enough, and I think we're not quite up for it. And I don't think I had a chat with them the other day, and they played very well when they were playing away. But I think West Ham will be very up for it. And I think we may go 2-0 up, and I think they may score 2 goals.
Oh, there we go.
Or whatever happens, we'll come back. I just think there'll be 2 goals. I'm feeling a bit negative about the team at the moment. I just feel if Cheek plays, he's so weak that they'll just play through him. Unless he's bolstered. I just think not playing Rudiger.
That's why I want three in midfield. That's why I want three in midfield, you see.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you play Cheek with Kante, you got a problem. If you play Cheek with Jorginho, you got a problem. If you play Cheek, Kante and Jorginho.
With Jorginho and Kante.
You know, that's why I was really saying it. Well done you for being different, and let's hope it doesn't end up as 2-2. Right, we are about to toddle off, but we will be back. We will be back on Monday for the main Chelsea Fancast show with me and JK, obviously, and as yet undecided guests, because I have not yet completed the schedule, as they will know. But we'll be back on air at 7 p.m. and we'll be looking back, obviously, at the match against West Ham, and we'll be looking ahead to the Premier League match against Man United next Thursday. It never stops. But there you go. So, Dan, lovely to see you. Haven't seen you for ages. Really nice to see you again, my friend. Thank you.
Good to be back, and let's roll on, beat the Hammers. And let's make it a happy weekend.
Yes, indeed. Not happy for the Hammers, obviously.
No.
Adam, an absolute privilege. We've had you for the whole bloody show. What can I say?
Thank you very much for having me. Let me stick around as always.
We love seeing you, mate.
Add team selection predictions.
We love seeing you. You know that. And as for you, Mr. Stamford Bridge, I almost said Chidge then, Mr. Stamford Bridge himself, the veritable legend that is Jonathan Kidd. I missed you last week. I really missed you. It's lovely to see you again.
Oh, I was wondering whether I could have done it from the stand at Craven Cottage. But
is that your agent on the phone, Dan? Is that your agent, Dan, or is it Jonathan's agent?
I don't have that kind of line.
It's Dan's agent, clearly. Mate, lovely to see you. Dan, yeah. I'll see you again on Monday. But you lot in Mixler, lovely to see
you.
Lovely to see you people too. Until then, keep it blue, keep it carefree, and keep it Chelsea. Up the Chelsea!
Up the Chelsea!
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.